Welcome to the Lending Forward podcast, brought to you by Atlantic Bay Mortgage Group. This is your home for real discussions about the mortgage and housing industry. Our hosts are here bringing you firsthand accounts from people at the heart of the business. And we're chatting with professionals from all corners of the industry as they help cultivate transparency around the future of the industry we love. Together, we are lending forward all we know to you. Thanks for joining us for today's episode. Let's dive in.
This episode is sponsored by Active Comply. Active Comply simplifies compliance, leveraging AI and workflow tools to build digital trust for independent mortgage lenders and brokers. Their solutions streamline social media monitoring, website oversight, marketing compliance, and remote work reviews to reduce regulatory risk, lower costs, and give executives real-time visibility into their brand and compliance posture. At the same time, Active Comply safeguards institutions while empowering loan officers to market freely and grow without added compliance burden.
Hey, everybody. We are back with another episode of Lending Forward. I am your host today, and I am excited to be co-hosting with somebody new today. I've got Melissa Grindel, Executive Vice President and Head of Compliance at Active Comply. Hey, Melissa.
Howdy, howdy, everybody. Thanks for having me.
And I can't believe it, but I'm joined with two other compliance gurus for this episode. We are going to be diving in to how the compliance landscape is shifting. And so we are thrilled to have Brett Contreras, Vice President of Compliance at West Capital Lending, and our very own Amanda Tucker, Chief Risk and Compliance Officer here at Atlantic Bay. Guys, thanks for joining Lending Forward.
Good morning.
I just want to know that I've never been invited, Melissa, to co-host. So I mean, I don't know how.
It's all that you know. You know.
It is. That's what I hear. But no, I'm so excited to be here and love that we have this group together joining us this week for Lending Forward.
This is really your tryout, Amanda, to see if you can co-host in 2026.
Oh, I've already left. Brett and Melissa know, like, just make sure that, you know, you make me look good so that I get the full-time position.
Well, we are really excited to have you guys join. If you don't mind taking just a few minutes so our listeners understand a little bit more about you. Where are you from? How'd you get here? How'd you get into compliance?
Maybe we go alphabetically, Amanda, Brett, and then Melissa.
Sure.
Sounds good.
Okay. Well, Amanda Tucker, I'm Atlantic Bay's Chief Risk and Compliance Officer. So I always describe my role as I get to have all the fun. If it's fun, we are having it. So it's regulatory compliance, people engagement, legal, cybersecurity, third-party risk, operational compliance, all the fun. I've been with Atlantic Bay for about 8 years. Prior to this, I spent some time over on the commercial banking side. For large and complex commercial banks, those that are publicly traded. But I think my real claim to fame that, you know, it's been enough years that at some point this can't be my claim to fame, but I started my career in the industry as a regulator back in my home state of Massachusetts. So have had a really interesting 22 years in the business and love how it's constantly evolving. I think a lot of people view regulatory compliance as something you have to do and maybe a bit dry, but I think every day is different. And that's what I love about it.
I love it. You are having so much fun. I can attest.
That's all fun.
Brett, what about you? Who are you for this session today? Tell us about yourself.
Who am I? Brett Contreras. I'm the VP of Compliance here at West Capital Lending. This is my first year here. So I came from another mega broker and have been doing this for about, in this role, about eight years or so. So dealing with state regulators, regulatory compliance, all that. Prior to that, it was QC for a company that did a lot of quality control and just kind of evolved into this as the demands grew. But I love this. I love growing with the company, helping the company grow, keeping us protected. And it's ever changing. It's an ever changing landscape, as you guys well know. So post CFPB, you know, half the reason we're here talking about this, but the individual state actions and enforcement and stuff. It's a constant challenge, but it's something I love doing. And every day with new things coming out, technology, as you mentioned, Amanda, cybersecurity, all this stuff. So it's fun. I enjoy tackling this stuff, and it's just something I love building my team out to do and watching this company grow. So
that's awesome. Love it. My name is Melissa Grindle, as mentioned, head of compliance at Active Comply. We're on the vendor side. I think that's what's really great about today's call is we've got that IMB perspective, that broker perspective, and that vendor perspective. And so in that way, we're the most dealing with some of those state regulators and some of those exam requests. And so it'll be really great to see those unique perspectives come into play. And we're collaboratively today on the call. But my background, I used to work at an IMB myself. And so I got that firsthand experience of working with examiners. But coming on to the vendor side, I think what's been really exciting and illuminating is seeing just the different risk tolerances between different lender types and lender sizes, seeing how regulators are interacting with some of our lender partners and how that has changed in the recent months, as an example, with the new administration and things. So I think that'll be a focus for our conversation today for sure.
Mm.
Absolutely. Well, thank you guys all for joining. And I mean, we're all here because of an article that, Brett, I believe you pulled this group together for. So if you don't mind, you know, kind of letting us know what triggered the article, why, what made you want to write it?
Well, it was kind of motivated by just some of the exams that I currently have going. And there's, they really vary depending on the state. So I have smaller states, and I mean, as you might imagine, they're sometimes easier to work with. They're less intense, but you know, they still go through the full scope of the exam. And then I have other states that are just like we were talking about. They'll keep asking for more and more and more. They just want to keep digging until they find something, even if there's nothing to find. So just this chaos of differences in the states, I just kind of wanted to find a way to maybe reach a lot of the examiners, and hopefully some of them will read this, but just to reach them and let them know that, you know, hey, we're trying to work together here for a common goal. So from a compliance department standpoint, it's like we want to operate within the guidelines and with transparency and do things right. And that's what we're doing here. And it's especially important as compliance here at WestCap, as we're growing so rapidly, and there's just a lot of areas to keep, you know, under control and make sure that we're not doing anything outside the scope. So all of those things, it was just kind of a way to try and reach them without having individual conversations, but hopefully they'll read it and see that we're trying to work with you guys. And, you know, we would love to have more of an open dialogue about how we can, as a group, just kind of go forward and, you know, doing things the right way. So that was my motivation for it. So
I have we'll see. Too. One of the things that I loved about this concept of the article and a lot of the conversations that Brett, Melissa, and I have, that I'd say if you're taking something from this conversation and this podcast, the other side of that is the industry collaboration. This is moving and changing so rapidly. And if you are a multi-state lender, you can't possibly hope to have your finger on the pulse of exam processes, exam experiences in every single state. And so really leaning into your industry, your network, your peers. I think one of the things that I love about this business is everyone's openness and willingness to collaborate, to talk, to share experiences. And so that to me is one of the coolest things that came out of this article.
I have to echo those sentiments. And like, I think we very often have seen compliance as a community, right? And that we're so willing to share those resources and collaborate. But I know, to Brett's point, I think based on the article title and some of the content we'll be sharing herein, you're going to see those state regulators become more and more part of that community and be a more important partner in the years to come, I think.
And I'm so glad that you guys came on, because I mean, that's what, you know, this podcast is all about. I'm hoping that by sharing y'all's insights in this article that, you know, more and more people are becoming aware and they know they're not on a silo having to, you know, figure this out on their own. But before we really dig into the article, you know, we do have a decent amount of sales folks that listen to this podcast. So I want you guys to kind of come back a little bit and talk to me about what actually is changing and how are these examinations, I mean, how are they different than how they've been in prior years?
I think you're in compliance. It's, you know, things like RESPA have been around for many, many years and they haven't really changed. You know, I think RESPA just celebrated its 50th anniversary. And so I think for many compliance folks, some of these same laws and regulations at the federal level have continued to exist, and there's not a whole lot of movement there. But we're seeing some really rapid changes on the state level where they're a little bit more nimble. As an example, I know that within this past year, we've seen some big changes to Texas regulations, as an example, with how you are doing your advertising. And some of the stipulations there, from websites to social media and the like. We're seeing Oregon really rapidly make some changes around remote work supervision requirements to keep up with some of those emerging items that have come out of the pandemic. So I think you're going to see state level regulations means, you know, a lot more in a compliance department than ever before. And I'm hoping that a lot of those sales folks are looking to their compliance teams as a compliance partner. You have your own job and your own duty to focus on, and you want compliance to be there to support you and help you navigate these changes seamlessly.
I think Melissa is exactly right. It's also what we're seeing emerge is the state iterations of federal laws. And so Telephone Consumer Protection Act, for example, you know, TCPA, and this is one of my favorite things about the conversation with, you know, the CFPB no longer being in existence. You have regulations like TCPA that has always been under the purview of the Federal Trade Commission, which is still alive, well, and actively enforcing. But now you have a number of states that in recent years, and we have several states where we're either in a year where these laws were enacted and we are at the compliance by date, or we're approaching compliance by dates. So Texas, of course, saw a TCPA iteration. Virginia has a TCPA iteration. And while all of them have a lot of consistency to the federal law, we are seeing nuances on a state-by-state basis. And so now, if you are a multi-state lender, you're faced with the very real challenge of, do I apply the most stringent state requirements, or do I take a state-by-state approach? A state-by-state approach is not necessarily the most efficient or effective. And so it's left a lot of us saying, you know, how do we best ensure compliance to protect the company? I know here at Atlantic Bay, and Hannah, you hear this all the time, and we have one license. Our mortgage bankers, you have one license. That's how we're all here. That's how we're all earning a living. That's the business we're passionate about. And so making sure that we take the necessary steps to protect that license. But it's become increasingly challenging because of the shifting focus from federal to state. I think that to a certain extent, too, our states have been left in this place where, you know, our outgoing CFPB director last January, Director Chopra, had really issued this memorandum to states, reminding them of what you know they are able to do, what they should do. And so it's left a lot of our states feeling like, to protect their consumers, they have to step in and fill this void, and they have to step in and have a more stringent exam and enforcement process.
Are you seeing the state?
We're also seeing quite a few people from the CFPB, former CFPB examiners, get adopted by some regulatory agencies, and they've brought maybe some of that CFPB directive and gumption with them at the state level. They're bringing some of those insights to those state regulators that maybe didn't have as many resources before, didn't have some of the technology that maybe the CFPB did. And so we're, I think we're seeing, to your point, Amanda, where we had talked about it at the beginning of the year, where we thought this was going to go, we're seeing that come to fruition, where we're seeing 50 mini CFPBs start to really spring up. And it makes it really difficult for lenders to navigate that if you're needing to interpret
right.
of those CFPBs.
And I wanted to highlight Amanda's point on that, because it is like wide open for the individual states as their interpretation varies so much. So they interpret things so differently sometimes. And this is an area where I find myself pushing back a lot. Because when it's not clearly stated in their statutes, or the interpretation seems off to me, I do push back. So, and this is part of the relationship I'm hoping to create with the regulators. So it should be more of a dialogue than help me understand what you're asking for, and I'll be happy to show you like what we're doing and stuff. So, It's a little more challenging since it's not like one set coming from the CFPB, it's the individual states. And like you're saying, to like go to the lowest common denominator, I like that idea, but like for us, we're licensed in 48 states. So, and to try and keep it to where it's productive and open for the LOs, and kind of like balance that between regulators, it's a little challenging, but you know, that's what makes the job fun, right?
So true. I think also to that point, that at least in my personal experience, seeing kind of the uptick in state-by-state exams, a big part of that conversation with these state regulators has been more focused on narrative, and that they are more open to being a collaborative partner than maybe, you know, we had experienced in the past. Even though we were having more exams maybe than ever, we're also having a different layer of communication with state regulators than we've ever had before. You know, CSBS being top of mind, of course. Amanda, yeah. Brett, you had some of those conversations with state examiners this year, where you've kind of felt that shift in how they're approaching some of those conversations with you.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I think, you know, one thing, I do think we need to appreciate where some of these states were when this shift really occurred at the beginning of 2025. A lot of states were either already limited in their staffing, and now they're in a place where they're having to expand their exam focus. We're seeing examination cycles change. And so they're trying to increase their staffing levels while maintaining a relatively rigorous exam schedule. And so I think if we put ourselves in that place, you know, in the last couple of years, it's been really tough in the industry. And I think we've all probably at times felt those staffing constraints. I think our states are there. And so appreciating that, you know, that's a place that they're in. But, you know, Brett said it right. It's got to be a dialogue. Have we received exam packages and looked at the request and said, this doesn't feel in scope? Absolutely. Does it mean we gave them anything and everything in the hopes that like, this is enough, you'll read this and go away? No, if we've had questions, we've called and said, hey, we see this question. I think we need to help understanding where it falls within the scope. We had something come across the other day in a state exam, and we had four of our team members read it, and we kept saying like, this doesn't make sense. And so we picked up the phone and we said, look, we want to make sure that we're giving you the information you need. Can you help us understand so that we can better explain it to the team that's got to pull this data? And I will tell you, I mean, the exam team that we were asking these questions of, they were really positive. It wasn't negative. And actually on the scope item, they said, you know what? You're right. We actually don't need that. And so I think now, is that going to be your experience every time out with every state? Is it even going to be your experience in the same state back to back? No. But I think as long as you, the lender, are building that relationship, and, you know, I think we talked about this when we were drafting the article, If you're in a contentious exam and you're already in kind of enforcement territory, you're probably too late to the table to build the relationship. And that's why it's so important today that you're building it ahead of that. Because if you find yourself in that place, you're going to find it's a far more, you're going to come out more successful on the other side of that exam and enforcement if you've built the relationship. And oftentimes, if you've built the relationship, you're not getting into enforcement territory without really knowing that's where you're going.
And I think part of the hurdle there for many lenders is, you know, maybe I want to build that relationship. And to your point, I would rather that not be, you know, when I have an open exam and we're in the room together, because it feels a little bit too late. So how do I go about building some of that rapport or those conversation pieces with my examiners before we get there? I personally have seen a lot of positivity with going to some of these different conference opportunities like Armor, where you have the opportunity to sit down with the regulator and have those conversations. If you have something that's top of mind for you that feels a little sensitive for your institution, knowing that you can partner with different vendor partners, even to say, hey, can you ask examiners about this item if you're going to this conference? I'm not as regulated as you find lender partners are. And so I'm able to ask some of those more sensitive questions and bring some of that information back to the group as a whole. But I don't know, Amanda and Brett, how have you best navigated some of those relationship building opportunities with your regulator?
I think communication, just reaching out to them and just kind of trying to open a dialogue, and not all of them will. Some of them are a little more guarded, like they're the examiner. They'll send us a request for, you know, what they're asking for, what they need. But they don't really like to have too much back and forth. And others are more than happy to guide you or answer questions on that. Like you said, if something's out of the scope and I call and say, hey, is this really what you need? Or what are you looking for exactly? And I want to help you find it or get you exactly what you need. So a lot of them are open to that. But I think just the communication with them is the key, like reaching out to them. I hate sometimes bringing up state exams, like just having this conversation is probably going to add two more for me next week.
I hope not. Knock on wood somewhere, right?
I said something the other day and I got an email from Michigan that they're, so I'm like, oh boy, that makes it, I think, 9 that I have going right now. So, and they're all different, you know, and it's great because you kind of get to see like the differences between the states and how they behave. And like you said, too, I don't think it's realistic to expect that you're going to get the same result from the same state twice in a row, like back to back. So it's just they're all different, but I think getting to know some of the regulators really makes a big difference. Anytime, to your point, Melissa, that you can get in front of them and just build a little bit of a rapport or relationship, I think goes a long way. So if they know you, they're happy to work with you. And like you said, Amanda, it's more probable that you will not get to the enforcement stage unless you already know you're going there. So I think they're more willing to work with you or keep you in the know of what's coming or where you guys are deficient, stuff like that, before we get to like that enforcement action. So I just think the relationship is key.
I would say too, we're in an era, and I think we always are, but I would say more so now than previously, where advocacy matters. And I think even the advocacy focus in the industry has shifted from agency and federal government to state. I am a huge proponent of the Conference of State Bank Supervisors. I think that, you know, and that's another one where I'm going to appreciate the struggle, right? Because they really, from a rulemaking enforcement authority standpoint, they don't have that. But their hope is to create kind of baseline exam policies, procedures, processes, build the technology to promote consistency. The one thing about the Conference of State Bank Supervisors is they are very open to dialogue and feedback with the industry. I think Armor is a fantastic tool. If you've ever imagined what like a speed dating networking event looks like with regulators, it's Armor. Melissa's laughing. I mean, you walk into this huge room and you can go up to each state's, they have like a little table set up and they always bring swag too, which is cool because then you come home with all this state swag. But you know, we were at Armor 2 years ago and we went up to, I think, 8 or 9 of the tables in the states that, you know, we have our heaviest footprint. And this was sort of when team names and team branding was really just a big thing in the industry. And we really saw it blow up. And every state had a different approach, definition, requirement. And we walked up and we said, look, we have a lot of our LOs who want to brand. How do we ensure they do it compliantly? And each state gave us a very clear answer. Did we love every answer? No.
Was it the same answer?
It was not the same answer. We didn't love every answer, but to be fair, they told us, they were very clear on the expectations. And so I think leveraging those opportunities to engage, I do think leveraging your advocacy opportunities, you know, we're a huge proponent of the Community Homelenders of America. We also are involved with MBA. Those are great opportunities to sort of band together with other lenders to really focus on the priority of putting this top of mind. I do think you're seeing a lot of trade associations and advocacy efforts shift more so to state regulation. And so understanding what your organization's doing today. And a lot of our state agencies and certainly the CSBS are very open to dialogues with these advocacy efforts. And, you know, one of the things, and we say this a lot internally here, but I think we're seeing this in the industry, you know, we're stronger together, right? If several of us are coming together to say, you know, hey, this is a real challenge. How do we overcome this? How do we achieve compliance without this becoming an operational and cost nightmare? I do think if you're hearing that from multiple lenders, the states and CSBS certainly are going to take notice, and they are taking notice.
I heard a couple of different components there from Amanda and Brett, where I know, Amanda, before we hopped on, you had said the phrase state creep, which gave me a chuckle being in software. I'm thinking of scope creep, but state creep. And Brett, to hear you say, you know, I'm in 9 exams right now, which is fairly non-typical for what we've seen in the past, maybe. Are you seeing, as part of the shift this year, you know, a wider scope on these exams, more of them than ever before? And are there particular pitfalls that are coming out of some of those unique exam processes this year?
I want to add to her question, too. Are there common themes in the exams? Sure.
So this one I'm going to say, and this is a little funny to me because I'm sure if you ask the team here, they're probably like, Amanda's complained about this recently. So if every state we were seeing sort of a different approach from an information security, cybersecurity perspective. And some states you had a page of requests, other states it was like, do you have a disaster recovery plan? Great. And then other states, it was 27 pages. And so it was really difficult to navigate how robust your program needed to be. We all of a sudden in the last, I'd say 9 months, every state exam we've entered into has utilized CSBS's non-bank cybersecurity program. And so I'm going to say, you know, we're all sitting here saying we want consistency, right? And we do. And it's been really nice to see the same work program in each state because you know what to expect. It's consistent. Now, with that being said, we asked for it. Now we're getting it. And I think that's been one of the areas that has seen the most shift from a regulatory focus is, you know, previously as a non-depository lender, you saw some information technology examination, but now we're seeing a lot of these states hire dedicated IT examiners to deploy the CSBS's non-bank cybersecurity procedures. And so we've got the consistency, but I do think as an industry, this is probably a space that we do need to catch up, especially with what we're seeing with AI. Brett, I don't know. I think you guys see a little bit of a different perspective, which I always love hearing yours because your footprint's also a little different from ours as well.
A little bit. You know, what I am seeing is like different states. There are different requests. The scope of their exam is largely different from, say, Texas or Oregon or something like that. But what I am definitely seeing is they are learning more when they're in SES and they're seeing what the other states are requesting and findings and stuff like that. They're changing their scope of their exam. So their exams are broadening. The scope is broadening. So I'm seeing a lot of that. The state creep. I love that term. But I do see that in some of the states that are not in SES. They want to know like what exams we have going, like all the results of past exams. And then they start going down that path too. So I do see that. A lot of the stuff that they do ask for is just it doesn't seem relevant to the scope sometimes. So I kind of get a feeling when they're asking for something that they've just seen another state ask for. So, and those are things that I'll push back on, and you know, sometimes they go away, sometimes not, but
you're touching on something with SES, and I think for anyone who's listening, so state examination system really is the examination tool that we would love for all of our states to use. And this is something right. I know that Atlantic Bay has been very vocal about. We continue to see state exam requests come from, I mean, it's my personal favorite is email. You're doing an entire exam package via email. And you're hoping that email remains encrypted, but you're seeing OneDrive, you're seeing Box, Box is another one. I know here, because of the cybersecurity risk, based on the non-bank cybersecurity procedures, we have it blocked. And so when we have a state use Box, we're having to unblock it. And so to me, you've got this state examination system that is very robust, it's encrypted, it's secure. And so that's the question we've really focused on is why aren't all states obligated to use it? Why do they feel they can't use it? But Brett, you're bringing up a really great point. And this is something I learned recently. States using SES can see what you've provided. They can mm-hmm. also see your preliminary findings. And so I do think we're kind of in an era where, let's say you're being examined by Virginia and they're in there looking and they say, hey, you know, Atlantic Bay had a finding recently in Kentucky with remote work or whatever it may be. And then they're saying, I wonder if they're compliant to Virginia's remote work. And so they're leveraging some of their narrowing in on certain areas based on what they're seeing in SES. So again, it's the same thing, you know, we want consistency. And I think we need consistency from an efficiency and a cost control standpoint. But the flip side of that is, I think that's going to cause a lot of us to have to really enhance our programs, change our approach and focus, and evolve with where we're seeing it go.
I would say at the very least we're not, you know, making flash drives and mailing them in, I suppose, anymore. So we've come a long way. We just have a little bit further.
I'm gonna date myself here, but when I was examining, it was like a piece of graph paper and a pencil, and you were manually spreading the balance sheet. So yes, I remember the days when you would mail in the flash drive.
One day at a time, right?
I would love to see some consistency here. I mean, I think we all need to be moving forward to like one system in SES and one place where they go for the exams. And I don't know why. And Amanda, I'm laughing about the Box thing because I've got a state right now that's in SES and they send their information request in SES. And then he's got a Box account set up for me. to send to drop all my documentation into. It can go right into SES, which is how we do every other exam, but they're not set up yet, or they don't have it figured out yet to do it all through SES. So I don't like doing that. I've got Pennsylvania has their own portal, Missouri. It's all these things where they set up a a secure file sharing thing, secure. But we're having to go to these multiple things, and it's not so bad if you've got a couple, but when you get to 8, 9, 10 exams going at once, it's a lot to keep track of.
And I think that what we're seeing is kind of a point of friction here, where we know that in our interactions with state examiners, that they want to be partners to us and that they want to help us navigate these items. And to your point, their scope has broadened, and you know, maybe some of the staff that they're bringing on is a little bit greener. As an example, maybe some of those staff members are being told to look for specific AI components and security issues. Maybe that's not something they have ever had to navigate before. And so they might be looking to you for education to some extent there. So I know that many of these folks are probably also wanting to get a more uniformed path there.
Yeah.
And we're in that partnership to help navigate it. But it's still a frustration point to everybody in the industry right now.
I was going to ask, you know, while you all are building these relationships with the regulators, is that something that you're saying to them? I mean, is that part of that relationship building? Hey, I don't like that you're sending me this Dropbox. I'd really like.
I think it's a little sensitive because there are states that that I deal with that are behind. And like, as we've pointed out, they're understaffed. Mm-hmm. But I also feel like they're not really informed, I guess, on how these exams work or what they're exactly looking for or doing. And I think that's just training and maybe their budget or their limited staff. But I feel like just kind of helping them. I mean, as much as I want help from them, it's like I feel like sometimes we can help them also. So
I think you're going to have to if you want some of these exams to be really successful also. Partnerships go both ways.
Exactly. Yes, we ask, you know, is there a reason? Is that possible next exam cycle? And what we found is the states are very honest. A lot of the times we hear, you know, we're using Box because that's what's known within our technology function, or, you know, states that have their own portal. We're not going to change that, right? If your state has its own portal, we're highly unlikely to convince Pennsylvania to use SES. Mm-hmm. But always ask the question. The information we hear back, though, it is incredibly helpful from an advocacy standpoint. I think the consistency there, the traction is going to occur through some of the trade associations and the advocacy work. I think when you're kind of on the ground, if you will, your exam teams, to Brett's point, it's a little sensitive because I think they're doing what they are told they should be doing and how they should execute it. But Melissa, you touched on a really important part. And I think that this is something that, I mean, if we're all being really honest, we're all struggling from an AI standpoint. We're struggling with, oh, Hannah's laughing at me about this, but as an industry, we are seeing AI and technology rapidly evolve far beyond the existing regulatory set. And our examiners are feeling the same, right? They are being instructed, encouraged, and told through their training and guidance that AI needs to be a focus. They have to understand how organizations are using it. They have to understand where the risk is. But they're in the same place we are, where we're all sitting here saying, what body of rules are we applying? And I think, unfortunately, that's sort of opening the door to some application under existing regulations. So I know we've talked about, and I think we talk a little bit in the article about this, TCPA, so Telephone Consumer Protection Act, with kind of this new era of AI voice calling and texting. Alignment under that regulation. I also think, you know, the same states that are requesting cybersecurity exam program procedures, those states are also all asking for your AI program. So if you currently do not have an AI program or policy, that is an expectation in every state that we've been examined in, from everything that we're hearing from the industry. And so that really is becoming the baseline. And so I think, but they're also trying to evolve and adapt to this new AI era as we are. And I think it's creating confusion for them. So to me, that's like the common ground you're going to find in an exam is, you know, and we've asked, we've said, you know, what are you all seeing from an AI perspective? What are you hearing from your training that you're being instructed to kind of look to? And it really has opened the dialogue. Melissa, to your point, they want to help. They view it as an opportunity to encourage lenders with the ultimate goal to protect the consumer. And I think if you're approaching it with like, tell me what you know, it does put everyone kind of in a different headspace.
Mm-hmm. I for sure thought when we asked about themes across the states, AI was going to be the theme. That's why I was laughing, because I feel like everybody's talking AI right now and they're going to want something. Guys, we could talk for 2 more hours, but we are coming up on time. But I do want to ask you all, and this is individually, usually we end with lending it forward, but I kind of want to shift it a bit. If you could offer one piece of advice for somebody getting ready to head into their first, you know, multi-state exam, most likely everyone's already in one, but what would that piece of advice be? It sounds like an AI policy might be it. But finally, going back to the article, what core message do you all hope our listeners in the industry take away from that article? And Brett, I'll start with you.
Okay. Start with communication and be on time with the regulators. So that's huge. If you're not going to, and I mean, I'm definitely guilty of it. So I'll need an extra week or here, and most of them are fine. But what they don't like is not getting them the stuff by due dates for the exams. So yeah, communication is the strongest thing. Just let them know, and try and get off on a good foot as far as like building a relationship with them. And the, like Amanda, you're saying, like the AI is going to be like 26, it's going to be huge. So everyone's asking for it. And what I am finding is, even if your AI policy, cybersecurity policy isn't the most robust, a lot of these agencies, we forget that they're operating on their own. Not all of them have huge budgets for a lot of examiners and technology and all that. So providing a policy, whatever it is, a lot of them will work with you. And some of them will say, yeah, thank you for providing it. That's good. Others will actually say, you know, we'd like to see this or we'd like to see that, but it does open up that dialogue. So they'll let you know if they have ideas, and it's just working together with them. So the sooner you can start doing that, like at the beginning of the exam, the better. And then hopefully you don't get to the enforcement phase or the enforcement actions, but I think the rapport from the get-go is huge. So I would recommend that anyone starting in a multi-state exam is reach out to the examiner in each state. Make sure you're communicating with them to get them what they need when they need it. And just be open. That's one of the biggest things I find, is when you're transparent or willing to provide anything they're asking for. It goes a long way. But to add to that too, give them what they're asking for and only what they're asking for. And if they want more, they'll ask for it. So
I would say, you know, regulatory change management and how that translates over to your state specific requirements, especially those newer ones. I personally believe that what we are seeing in 2024, 2025, as it relates to offshore and subcontracted employees in certain states, that will be like the 2026-2027 AI. So that to me is an example of state law really came after the industry kind of moved towards some of the offshore resources, the subcontracting. And now we're seeing a number of states with certain prohibitions against that within the industry. And so change management, making sure that you understand the core requirements, the laws in all of the states in which you are licensed to do business. I don't think that's an unfair expectation of state examiners, is that you're licensed to do business here, you're engaging with consumers in that state, you should generally be compliant to those state laws. So when you get that exam package, reading through it, if they're asking for something that you're not familiar with, taking the time to do some research, making sure that there hasn't been a change that you haven't been aware of. I'm not saying tell them you're compliant, but, you know, I think also some ownership. If you're honest with them and you're asking for clarification on a new law, that openness of what you do and don't know is going to go a long way with them versus trying to create the policy after they've already started the exam.
I would say that compliance is the cost of consumer trust. That's something that I think many of us realize and recognize within our institutions today. But it is also what's going to cost you the trust of your examiner. And it's going to be the foundation of what other examiners are going to look at for years to come. They're going to see how you performed over here, and it's going to influence some of their decision making where they dig in deeper for the next one. And so some of this is, you know, it's on your report card, and that's going to have an influence on how you're treated to some extent. And so what I always recommend to lender partners is to build that narrative around how you are doing your best to mitigate consumer harm. And part of doing that is doing a comprehensive look back, if possible, at all of your past state exams over the past 5 years, identifying where you have had sore spots before and what steps you've taken to remediate that can go a long way with having some of those conversations with your examiners. Because if they're going to be doing that look back, you certainly should, across different state lines, and seeing where there might be crossover. So that's always my recommendation. And to do so, I think we have more technology at our fingertips than ever before. You know, leverage some of those vendor relationships where possible. I would imagine that even though states very often have smaller budgets, they might start to be using AI as part of their examination process as well. So with you using it, you'll see your examiners using it as well, and you should be prepared to speak about that intelligently and bring some of these items to the table as necessary.
That's awesome. Well, I appreciate all of you coming on and sharing all of this fantastic news. We're going to link the article in the show notes so everybody can click and read the article. But yeah, thank you guys so much for joining the podcast.
Thanks for having me.
Thanks, everyone.
Thank you, guys.
Thanks again for tuning into today's episode of the Lending Forward podcast. Be sure to subscribe to our channel, follow us on Instagram at Lending Forward, on YouTube and LinkedIn. Catch us every other Thursday with a brand new episode, and go lend something forward today. Atlantic Bay Mortgage Group, LLC, NMLS number 72043, NMLSconsumerAccess.org is an equal opportunity lender and employer. Located at 600 Lynn Haven Parkway, Suite 100, Virginia Beach, Virginia 23452.